I'd like to segue right now and say that at our very first conference here, we were fortunate to have the governor share remarks. And just a few weeks after that, he delivered a historic State of the State address that focused almost exclusively on addiction and the opiate crisis. And in that address, he made it very clear that people who have a substance abuse disorder, an addiction, are not other people. They're our people. They're us. That addiction is not a moral failing. It is a disease. And that we will not make headway in this problem unless we all work together, until the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch all work together in partnership with criminal justice professionals, treatment providers, educators, prevention specialists. It is my extraordinary honor to present to you again a person who changed the national debate about addiction, the governor of this great state, Peter Shumlin.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate. Thank you, Bobby. I got to tell you that Bobby Sands has been such a great partner to me on the issues that you're all working so hard on. We wouldn't be where we are without him. Thank you, Bobby Sands, for your leadership. I want to thank Dee Mahaly for letting us in, for his leadership only. Where'd he go? Thank you so much. And for the leadership of this law school, you've really done an extraordinary job. Thank you for all that you've done for us. All the partners in this room, and I want to give a special shout out to the Vermont Court Administrator's Office, who's been hugely helpful to us, the Department of State's attorneys. I bet you that TJ's not here. You know, he's running behind. He's working hard. But I know lots of others are here. The Vermont Defender General's Office, the Governor's Highway Safety Commission, my safety commission, as well as the national folks, who I think are here, aren't they? They're certainly our sponsors, along with Mike, the Governor's Highway Safety. Thank you, team, for all your help. To the honorable judges that I see here, including our Chief Justice, it's been an extraordinary partner. I just got to say that when we started this conversation about addiction, criminal justice reform, a long time ago, bipartisan, only in Vermont, it was a Republican governor, it was Chief Justice Reiber, many of the legislators, all three branches of government coming together and saying, hey, we got to start to get this right. And I want to thank you for your leadership, and as well as all your other partners on the court, including some who are no longer serving. I know Justice Burgess, I just saw him in the hall. He's here. Thanks for joining us. Justice Crawford, thanks so much for joining us today. You know, I had the pleasure of putting Justice Crawford on the Supreme Court, and he was my shortest serving member. Is that right? Yeah, I think you might have been the shortest serving member in the history of the state of Vermont. I don't know what it is about these guys you didn't like, but they liked you. So, well, and thanks for being here. I want all the justices to stand up because we have an extraordinary team. Come on. Every judge in this state who's here right now, stand up. We're going to give you a hand. Come on. Thank you for your leadership. A couple of folks couldn't tell if they were justices or not. Listen, if you don't have a black robe, you don't stand up, all right? To all the rest of you that are doing such great work, thank you. So I just want to share some parting comments with you because, you know, I do realize that governors have pacemakers. Mine is running out. They can't seem to recharge the batteries. So I realize that soon I'll go off into the sunset. And when I look around this room, I leave with an extraordinary sense of hope that Vermont is going to continue to put lives back together, to save lives, to look at the real issues that are driving not only our treatment courts, but our entire state, to make sure that we get this one right against the extraordinary challenges that we continue to face, the headwinds that I would argue are incredibly painful, stronger than ever, not weaker than ever, but stronger than ever, and entirely avoidable. Entirely avoidable. And that's the part I want to talk a little bit about with you today. Bobby mentioned that a few years ago we started a conversation in Vermont with the help of all of you that other folks in the country weren't having. And now the rest of the country is having it. And that's very important. I was in Nevada recently with Governor Sandoval and the First Lady, Kathleen Sandoval, who'd called a conference, 3-day conference, to where they were having the same conversations that we were having in our conferences 2.5 years ago in Vermont. Same challenges. Pill mills leading to addiction, lives being lost. Governor Sandoval talked about losing the son of one of his very, very close friends, football player on the local team. Just an extraordinary guy. Got into the injuries that football players got into. They put him on the pills. They kept handing him out. He died of a heroin overdose. You're hearing it from governors across the country, presidential candidates. You know, we talk in this election about all kinds of things that don't matter. And the candidates have actually, both candidates, believe it or not, both Trump and Hillary. Hillary's got a very good proposal that she outlined in the primaries to start finally giving states the help they need to fight this battle. 80%, 20% match. I think Vermont would get under her plan, where we're scraping the dollars together to make our treatment courts work, to do the things we need, to do the things we know we should be doing. Donald Trump was complaining the other day that he came out with a proposal on opiate addiction. I never got to hear it because on the same day he said that he wouldn't honor the election even if it happened, and he was blaming the media for not, you know, outlining his opiate plan, and the press was fighting back and saying, well, you know, it's kind of a big deal. You're the first presidential candidate that's ever said that you're not necessarily going to honor the outcome of the election, so you distracted us. But, you know, he had a plan, and I'd love to know what it is. The point is he has one.
It's free.
And it's free? It's great. It's going to make opiate addiction great again. So let's just run through where we are before we talk about why this is an easy problem to solve. Big picture. When I started talking to folks about why we were in this mess, and I'm not talking about the folks that are in this room, although we did a lot of talking, but I learned most, like you all do every day, sitting on the bench doing the work you're doing, certainly in treatment courts, listening to the stories, managing their lives, giving them hope where they otherwise are thrown in jail. The biggest lesson we all know is we were doing almost everything wrong, and you heard that from the folks who were suffering from the disease. And so we all looked at that together, and we said, well, you know, if we know that denial is the biggest challenge, if we know that there's a teeny window of opportunity to break that denial, and if we know that that's when you bottom out, let's reform our criminal justice system. And we've all been working on that together. I would argue that some counties are doing that better than others. I have met resistance, I'll be honest, from my friends in some state's attorney's offices who find all kinds of reasons not to do rapid intervention. Others are doing it. I've gone to state's attorneys and personally begged them to do it. There's always reasons not to change. But I would argue that where we're doing it, it's working. It's working. That if when someone's down and out and the blue lights are flashing and the handcuffs are on, if we can say to them, This is your moment. And if you'll join us, we'll get you into treatment. We'll get you the services, the wraparound services. We'll help you manage your life so that you can get back to work, get back into the workforce, get your life back together, get back to your kids, try to piece this thing back together. We know you'll fail. We know that it's not going to be a smooth ride. You know, this isn't Alice in Wonderland. But we'll get you there, and we'll keep you out of jail. And you won't see a judge, necessarily. And you'll not have to live forever with a criminal record. We got to get that one done in Vermont. We do. And I know that there's always reasons not to, but I want to beg those who are finding reasons not to, to find reasons to. I'm begging you. And I want you to keep working on that long after I've walked into the sunset. Second, treatment. We still got waiting lines. Now, we've reduced those waiting lines big time. We really have. The press doesn't write positive stories anymore, but, you know, you talk to the folks around outside of Chittenden County, and we're making real progress there. We really are. So we're about to open a new treatment center in St. Albans. I think that's going to reduce by a couple of hundred, 300-400 people. The folks in Franklin County are now traveling to Chittenden County. That'll give us a chance for reducing those waiting lines in Chittenden. But listen, we got to build out the treatment centers. This will not work if we don't. Mental health and wraparound services. I personally believe that the waiver that I signed yesterday that moves Vermont from a system where we pay for quantity of health care to one where we pay for outcomes may be the biggest driver in finally getting the support services for addicts that our system requires. Why? Because there's nothing more expensive, just isn't, than addiction. I don't need to tell you all this. Forget the human side. There's nothing more expensive. So when your healthcare system finally gets reimbursed for avoiding catastrophic care, raise your hand if you can think of a place where you end up with more catastrophic care, not just for the addict, but for the family members, than this one. I don't think you can find one. So that could be huge. So progress, hope, reason to celebrate. Third, rescue kits. We've saved hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lives by getting Narcan into the hands of everybody who will take it. We've done that better than any other state. I have folks come up to me. I was going into a food shelf recently, and a woman grabbed me. She was pushing a cart. She's homeless. And she said, "Thank you for saving my son's life." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "He OD'd. And when the cops showed up, they had Narcan. And he's with us now. Thank you. He would have died. He would have died." The limits that Commissioner Chen put on pills, those are the toughest in America. They are. You know how hard that was? Seriously. Why was it hard? That's what I want to talk to you about. This isn't a hard problem to solve. How many of you read the Washington Post story last Saturday, Sunday, about the DEA? Did anyone read that? Raise your hand if you read that story. Can you make this stuff up? I want you all to go Google Washington Post, DEA, heroin addiction, pills, OxyContin, Purdue. You'll read the story and you'll cry. This is what happened. Five investigative reporters put this story together. When some hardworking folks at the DEA started seeing the connection between the pill mills that Governor Sandoval just called me out to Nevada on, because he's got tons of them, and the distributors of the drugs, the middle people, the companies that make billions of dollars off these pills, they did their job. They started busting them. They have the ability in the DEA to say to these companies, 80% of the pills distributed in America Pharma are from three companies, to say to them, you will not ship those thousands and thousands of pills to that shop in Florida or Nevada or in Ohio because it's not legit. They're just giving the pills away. And guess what? Big Pharma got mad. They didn't like it. Mucho dinero. So what did they do? They got the Justice Department to call them in. Say, what are you doing to these folks? They're our friends. The Justice Department guys say, no, they're not our friends, actually. They are killing people. And you know what? We got to go out and kill, pick up the dead bodies. Oh, no. You got to understand, buddy. We got to look at your process. They're our friends. You know what they did? They fired them. They drove them out. Those DEA members are no longer working for the DEA. Their incidences of reducing intervention directly from the DEA, where they say you will not sell pills to those folks, from 2011 to 2014 dropped by 400%. Guess what? Lots of pills being passed out in America. Pharma happy. It's worse than that. Big Pharma got so concerned, they went to Congress and they changed the standard for the DEA to stop the pills from being shipped. I'm not making this up. It's Washington Post, black and white, print. You know what? There's two United States senators. One of them's Senator Patrick Leahy. I know Diane Derby's here from his office. He's been a huge partner to us. He and who's the other senator? I didn't know the guy. Wyden? Where's he from?
Oregon.
They got together last week, this week, they sent a letter to the Justice Department saying, we got to investigate this. What's going on here? How come you all are for killing people? So here's my point. We can do everything right in Vermont. We can continue to innovate. We can continue to do the good work of the treatment courts. And I've sat both in Chittenden and right here in Windsor County in the treatment courts. It's unbelievable what those judges are doing. There's one sitting right here. But it is such an amazing thing. If you haven't sat there, I've seen a lot of legislators here. If you haven't done it, I beg you to do it. Go spend 2 or 3 hours, just sit there and watch. These judges are saving their lives, literally saving their lives, putting their families back together, putting lives back together. So why are we here? Every 20 minutes, it's now 19 minutes, I read recently, someone dies from this disease. Every 19 minutes. I was talking to Governor Ohio recently. He's been great on this issue. He now has carfentanil out there. Has everyone heard of carfentanil? You know, this is the stuff that if you want to put an elephant to sleep, this is what you use, yeah? But most people aren't the size of elephants. And if you get 2 or 3 grams of this, you know, grains of this stuff, it's over, it's curtains. So that's what's happening in Ohio. I'm sure carfentanil's coming our way. So imagine for a second, I don't know, there must be a good 150 people here anyway, right? Imagine for a second that we had a disease in America where if you had 150 people in a room, every 20 minutes, every 19 minutes, one of them would get dragged out of here on a stretcher. Just imagine that for a second. I want to know how many of you would stay in this room. How many of you would stay here and listen to this governor talking too long? Raise your hand. Every 19 minutes, the stretcher comes in. We load you onto it, get on the gurney, we haul you out of here. It would be so commonplace that the speaker wouldn't even, you know, we'd all just sort of let the gurney guys come in and grab you and haul you out. We wouldn't even stop, you know. We wouldn't say sorry. I mean, it would be so commonplace. So here's the point. If we could just get the Justice Department, the FDA, and the feds to stop passing out painkillers like candy, we wouldn't be here right now. So why is it so tough? Read the Washington Post. We got an election going on here shortly. This is not a partisan issue. I think there isn't anyone running for office who thinks it's good that every 19 minutes one of our sons or daughters or neighbors dies. I don't think there's anyone running for office who thinks that's a great idea. I don't think there's anyone running for office who would sit in one of the treatment courts in Vermont and say what led to this pain and this crisis and this destruction of life is a good thing. It's good for their kids, who are the biggest victims. You know, we got more kids right now, babies, under our supervision, state supervision, than at any time in the history of the state. It's happening all across America. We can't find enough foster families. We got more kids being born addicted to this awful stuff than at any time in our history. Their lives, too, will be very fragile going forward. You know, this is a big deal. So what I'd ask of all of you is, let's keep doing the good work in Vermont. But for God's sake, we should be marching in the streets. We should be taking on our own Justice Department. You know, I'm going to tell you this story anecdotally. Is there press here? Great. So I'm going to tell you a story that I can't make up.
Governor, we are recording.
Oh. Well, I'm going to tell it anyway. So the governors get together a lot. We do across the country. And unlike Congress, for whatever reason, we're blessed by the fact that we're not too partisan. We actually, I think because there's so few of us, we really need each other for ideas to help solve problems. So the New England governors, Northeast governors, we get together quite often. So the last meeting, it was me, Governor Baker from Massachusetts, Republican, just so you all know this is bipartisan, right? Governor LePage from Maine, Republican. Governor Hassan from New Hampshire, Democrat. Governor Malloy, Democrat from Connecticut, and Governor Raimondo, Democrat from Rhode Island. And we're literally having this conversation about this issue again. And Governor Hassan says, you know, Governor Baker, I can literally tell you the streets in what towns I've got most of the dealers coming from that are coming into my state. I can tell you the streets. And I say, Governor Baker, I could probably take you to the buildings in parts of Holyoke and a few other communities, Springfield, where I know we've got a huge problem. And LePage weighs in and says, hey, I can tell you where mine's coming from in Lawrence, Mass. So we look at each other and we say, well, what if governors can have this conversation, it's a little scary, what if, in addition to everything else that we're doing, we called up the attorney general and we said, let's get our U.S. attorneys and their teams, some of our judges, some of our enforcement folks, and you, Loretta Lynch, and let's just sit down off the record, hidden away somewhere, and talk about what we could do that we're not doing, because this is scary, your people are dying. So they say, Shulman and Baker's bipartisan, and you call up Lynch. So we call. And I don't know what the problem was, but, you know, I could not get the Justice Department of the United States to come to Boston to meet with us to have this meeting. And I texted to Baker, and I said, well, you know, was that a weird conversation? Or is it just me? He goes, no, that was really weird. That was really weird. My point is, I say Washington's in bed with them. And I say enough politicians won't stand up and say, this is a solvable problem. Pre-late 1990s, when Purdue told all the healthcare providers across America that they'd finally come up with a non-addictive painkiller, and they lied to the FDA, in fairness to the FDA, and they lied to all the healthcare providers in America, in fairness to our healthcare providers. And then they got taken to court because a lot of folks were getting addicted, and you know the rest of the story, they started dying. And they paid a fine, you know, three execs. They pleaded guilty. They paid the fine. Hundreds of millions. But it was a $10 billion a year industry. You know, these white-collar folks, they don't go to jail like the addicts. They don't serve time. They just pay fines. So we know the story. We know the history. Read the Washington Post. I say we start marching in the streets. I say we start taking up bipartisan action. Let's say to the FDA, let's say to the next president, let's say to the next U.S. Attorney General, being in bed with Big Pharma won't work. We are bigger than your profits. We're not going to let any more people die and have their lives destroyed because we have an irrational policy on painkillers in our country. We can do this. And I say there's no better voice than the little state of Vermont. We barked up first. Remember, you know, we got on the cover of Rolling Stone there. I always wanted to be on the cover of Rolling Stone, but not that way. They had the syringe and the maple can, you know. We can do it together. So I want to say to you, thank you. Press on. Regardless of who your new governor is, I don't know why I have so much trouble saying that, hold their feet to the fire. Hold their feet to the fire. Together, your brilliance, your commitment, the way we do things in Vermont can actually solve most of this problem so that we don't have waiting lines for treatment court, so that we don't have lots of people dying, so we don't have a lot of babies in state custody, so that we can put our state back together again. Thanks for all you're doing. I'm incredibly proud of you.